Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Alaikum, Namaste, Pak Sat Nam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tanya Wase Yake. Hello, may everything be well with you as it is with me. Welcome to Wednesday's Shir in Neo-Sabbatean Post-Lurianic Hasidic Kabbalah. I think those three descriptions pretty much sum up what we, the main streams of Jewish mysticism from which we take our Kabbalah. Before I begin today's shir, I'll recite the Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead as I do at the beginning of each class. Please close your eyes as you listen and remember someone to whom you were close who has passed away. In doing so, you will honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. Yiskadal v'yishkadash me'rabo, bomo divero kirase, v'yamlik melkase, b'kayakon, uvya mekon, uvkaya dekol, beis Yisrael, ba'agalo uvizman, koryev, ve'imru, omein. Yehe shmei rabo mavorak le'olam ule Leolam ule ome omayo, yisbarak ve yistabak ve yisparar ve yisramam, ve yisnase ve yishadar ve yisale ve yishalal, shmedu kacho beraku, leelo minko berkaso ve sharoso, tushbakoso ve nekamoso, da amiron beolmo ve imru omein. Yehe shlomo rabo min shamayo, vekayim ulenu ve alkol Yisrael ve imru omein. Ose shalom bimramov, hu yashe shalom, aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael, ve'imru, amen. Thank you very much. Let's see, where are we at here? Oh, yes, okay, let me check the recording levels real quickly here. And it appears that we are, okay, I'm going to turn that up just a hair. All right, that looks a little better. Good. Now then, those of you who attended last Friday's Erev Shabbat service and listened to the teaching that I gave there, which is a brief teaching, will recognize some of the material I'm going to teach on today. That's because I had to keep short to a certain time length, about 15 minutes, the teaching in that context, in that setting. And so I'm going, but it's right on point to what I've been teaching on, and that is this statement, this concept that exists in runs throughout the Torah, that man is a microcosm and God is the macrocosm. That God is the model or image upon which all things in the universe, including man, have been created or based. And so if you were there at the Erev Shabbos worship service, you'll recognize some of this, but bear with me because I've added greatly to it, not for the sake of adding to it, but for making more clear with more illustrations the points that I'm trying to make. Now then, as those of you who attended or otherwise listened to our 1 week ago today, last Wednesday's Shir on post-Lurianic Kabbalah, will remember, I was teaching on the mystical significance of the passage that we find in Exodus chapter 3, verse 14, in which Moses stands before God, who has appeared to Moses in the form of a divine fire, burning in but not consuming a thorn bush, the lowest of all of the bush or trees, bush family or trees. Not sure how the botanical breakdown works with phylum and family and all that stuff. But you know what I mean. It's the lowest of all the bushes. It's despised by all mankind because it rips and tears at the flesh of their cattle and their hogs and their sheep. And because it rips humans' clothing when they get near it. And it's not good for anything. But it was this plant that God chose up on his mountain, God's mountain, Mount Horeb, Har Sinai, however you want to refer to it, out in the middle of the wilderness, that God appeared to Moses. And when he was there, after some conversation, God makes this wonderful, wonderfully marvelous exclamation, which he says is his name. He says, Ahaya, Asher Ahaya, which translated in most versions, most translations of the Bible, appears as, I am that I am. Or I will be that which I will be. And that's okay, but as a Kabbalist and a mystic, I've translated it more literally because I'm trying to break open the surface level of translations, that surface level of narrative, and break it open and delve deeper in obedience to God's commandment to us to dive deeply and dig deeply into his Torah in order to reveal the secrets which God has stored there for us. And so I have translated it more literally and, as I say, also more mystically to read, I am, blessed am I. Now, if you recall, in our last meeting, we brought down three mysteries regarding this statement. First, it consists of three Hebrew words, Ahaya, Asher, Ahaya, thus incorporating the mystical significance of the number three, which, as you remember, all 27, that's counting the final forms, there are 22 separate letters of the Hebrew alphabet, but there are 27 forms, because five of those letters have a separate form when it appears as the last letter in a word. Okay, so out of those 27, which is itself mystical in significance, because you can break those letters apart into nine triplets, as in Aleph, Beit, Gimel. And you're counting. Each one is assigned a number. 1, 2, 3. Aleph, Beit, Gimel. 1, 2, 3. And if you break them apart into those nine triplets, 9 times 3 is 27, right? You break them apart into those nine triplets, there's an interesting mathematical relationship. Now, I'm going by memory. I don't even have this in my notes, so bear with me if I get tangled a little bit in this. But here's what it is. You can help me figure it out. The numbers are, in the first triplet, 1, 2, 3. Now, if you take the sum of those, all of those, let's see, 1 plus 2 is 3 plus 3 is 6. And you find the average or the mean of that, 6 divided by 3 numbers is 2. It just happens to be the second integer in the triplet. It means the middle integer, the middle figure, the middle number. We have a triplet consisting of Aleph, Beit, Gimel, which literally are the numbers 1, 2, and 3. And so that middle number is the average of the total gematria, or the sum of the three numbers. Now, what's the second triplet? That'd be 4, 5, and 6. So if you add those all up, it's 6 and 5 is 11, and 4 is 15, divided by 3 is 5. It's the middle integer. Another way to look at it is if you take the first and the last number in the triplet, 6 and 4 is 10. You divide that in half, you get the middle digit, 5. That is true for all of those numbers. You can make a little chart and find this out for yourself. Now, some of you may be saying, gee whiz, but what has that got to do with anything in Torah? Well, first of all, the Torah is made up of these 27 letters, 22 letters, they appear throughout the Torah in 27 different forms. So there is a significance because the Torah itself consists of these letters that can be broken apart into 9 triplets. We've already discussed the importance of triplets, or the importance of the number of 3, the different places that the number 3 occurs in the form of, for instance, in the triads that appear in the Eskayim, the tree of life, the diagram of the 10 holy sephirot. Okay? And there's 9 of those occurrences. There's 9 sets of triplets in the Hebrew tongue, which we are taught from tradition, handed down from our sages, back into the dimmest recesses beyond our memories. We have been taught that nine is an eternal number itself. And there's 3 in a triplet. So we have the sets of 3 in the numbers, and we've been taught from time immemorial that the holy tongue, the Hebrew language, is the holy tongue. It's the tongue that God chose to reveal himself through his holy Torah. Okay? And that tongue is made up of 27 different letters, which are 22 basic letters and 5 different forms, alternative forms, when those letters appear as the last letters on a word. Okay, and 9 itself is made up the factors. What are the factors of 9? 3 times 3 times 3. And then you multiply, that's 3 times 3 times 3 is 9, and you multiply it by a 4th 3, okay? And you come up with 27. So it's just a whole set. The Torah can be broken up into a whole set of 3s in terms of its numerical value. Okay? And, of course, the number 3 is Gimel. It's a letter, both letter and a number, as are all the Hebrew letters. All right. What else about this 3? Okay, I'm going to read to you from Shabbat or Shabbos 88a. This is a Gemara from the Talmud. Okay, now listen what it says. Blessed is the All-Merciful who gave his 3-part Torah to his 3-part nation through the third-born, Moshe, on the third day in which the people sanctified themselves in Sivan, the 3rd month of the year, counting from Nisan. I'll read that slowly and I'll describe what it's talking about. Blessed is the All-Merciful. That's another term for God or for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He, who gave his 3-part Torah. Well, what does that mean? What are the 3 parts of Torah? Well, the Tanakh consists of the Pentateuch, which are the 5 books that Moses wrote, the prophets, and the writings, all the other books. Chronicles, Kings, Ecclesiastes, the wisdom books. So there's 3 parts to the Torah. The Pentateuch, the prophets, and the writings. So there's 3 again. All of the words in the Torah are made up of combinations of the 3 the 3 letters, the 3 triplets. There's 9 sets of them. So it's made up of those. Okay, so it says, blessed is the All-Merciful who gave his 3-part Torah, the Pentateuch, prophets, and writings. Now, I'm explaining this. This isn't in the teaching. It's the teaching here in the Gemara from the Talmud, this Shabbos 88a, assumes that the student who is reading this and about to discuss it with his fellow student knows, has enough basic knowledge of the Torah, knows what these silent hidden references are to. So the Talmud is a form of shorthand. When people who, like say Gentiles or Christians, who were not raised in the Jewish tradition, in the Jewish tradition of Judaism, in which after the destruction of the temple and the redaction or collection and compilation of the oral Torah in the form of the Talmud took place, and then it took the place of the sacrifice. Ordinary people, instead of sacrificing at least once a year at the temple, which is what they used to do, since the temple was destroyed, they couldn't do it any longer. So the rabbis had to fashion, they had to make a change in the manner and the focus in which the people worshipped God, because they couldn't do it as they did before. So what they came up with was they redacted the oral Torah, and then they set as a commandment, not set as a commandment because it appears in the Torah, that we are to study the Torah. And so they created houses of study, Beit HaMidrash. The room you're in right now is Beit HaMidrash. It means house of study. Every village had a house of study run by the village rabbi. In those days, they didn't even call him a rabbi. They called him a Rebbe in Eastern Europe, which is what I'm called. I'm a Rebbe. Some people have said, what's the difference between a Rebbe and a rabbi? Well, tongue-in-cheek, I reply, well, a rabbi is a man of learning and instruction and obedience to the law, but a Rebbe goes beyond the law. A Rebbe is a rabbi that is spiritual. And they don't like hearing that, but that's essentially what it is. A Rebbe is mystical. Rabbis are not usually mystically inclined. They're more focused upon the legalistic requirements of the 613 commandments set forth in the Torah, and in settling legal disputes. All right, so let's get back to this statement from Shabbos 88a out of the Gemara, out of the Talmud. Blessed is the All-Merciful who gave his three-part Torah to his three-part nation. What does that mean? What three-part nation? We have the Benai is Yisrael, the sons of Israel, the Israelites, gathered because, remember, God gave the Torah to the Benai Israel through Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our teacher, okay, up on Sinai, Har Sinai, okay. So what three-part nation? Well, there are three parts to the Israelite nation. There are the Kohanim, which are the priests proper, led by the high priest, the Kohen Gadol. Then there are the Levites, okay, this is another family. Okay, and these are the priest helpers. These are the ministers of God. These are the ones who take care of all of the mundane occurrences every day in the temple. They help hold the sacrifices that are brought in by the people, being prepared for slaughter. They help clean up any messes. They get the candles and make sure that they're lit and replace those that need to be lit or replace the oil when it runs out of the lamps in the temple. These are the people who assist. These are the priests' assistants. And these two groups, the Kohanim and the Levites, are at the top of the social pyramid. And they only comprise a tiny percentage of all the Israelites. Then below that, in the Israelite nation, are the Israelites proper. Okay, these are the common people. That means anybody who is an Israelite who does not belong to the class of Kohanim, the two religious classes, and the Levites. But that's not a bad thing, because God said, I have made you my nation, a nation of priests. So all the Israelites are priests. And God tells us, I'm speaking now of the Jews, we are to be a lamp unto the nations, a light unto the nations. We are to guard the Torah and preserve it and protect it throughout time. So, because God says, my house, it will be a house of prayer to all the nations. That's a specific reference to the Goyim, to the Gentile nations. Krefluck, I cannot respond to private messages, and I'm teaching right now, so it's not a chat room, it's an instruction room, it's a house of study, so please do not interrupt my teaching with private messages. Thank you. If you want to stick around afterwards, I'd be happy to either chat with you or respond to any questions that you have. All right, so that's the three-part nation. And so here again we say, blessed is the all-merciful who gave his three-part Torah to his three-part nation through the third-born Moshe. Well, he was the third-born in his family. Who were the first two-born? His sister, who was the eldest, Miriam, and then his older brother, Aaron. Okay, so there's the number three again. On the third day in which the people sanctified themselves in Sivan, the third month of the year counting from Nisan. So what that's saying is that God gave his Torah to Moses to give to the people of Israel on a specific day in a specific month, the third day of Sivan. Okay, so the three words, Aheya, Asher, Aheya, are an allusion through, they are a palindrome, as I mentioned the other day, but they are an allusion in the fact that there's three words that reflect each other like a mirror, are an allusion to the number three, Gimel. Okay, what else did I bring down? That's one of the secrets that I wanted to fill out. Okay, the second thing I brought down is that this sentence, Aheya, Asher, Aheya, is a palindrome. And as I explained before, that's any set of words that read the same, whether you read them from their beginning or from their end. Now, I pointed out our Father Avraham's teaching in his book Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Formation, in which we are told their end is in their beginning. And I said this alludes not only to the ten holy Sefirot, okay, that all of the Sefirot were emanated out of the first Sefirot, Keter, Elyon, Crown Most High. And so that's their beginning. And it's also their end, because in the end, God will wrap all of this up. All the worlds will return to the first world of emanation, Atzilut, and in doing so, all of the ten Sefirot will be rolled up and returned to the one Sefirot, Keter, which then itself will be dissolved and absorbed into ultimately Ein Sof. So their end is in their beginning. But it refers not only to the ten holy Sefirot, but also to all of God's creation, including his children. Okay? So all of us, our ends are in our beginning. Our souls come from God, are exiled into this world of forms and names, through this, and separated from God by the veil of tears. And then we return when our physical bodies die. Our souls and the third part of our bodies, our composite bodies, the ethereal body, the zelem in Hebrew, is lifted up into the supernal worlds, returned to their place of origin with God. Okay, the third mystery I brought down is that all palindromes, including Aheya, Asher, Aheya, are verbal mirrors. Verbal mirrors. That's the nature of a palindrome, is it looks like you're looking at a reflection. You're looking at both sides at once. An original on the left and a reflection or copy on the right, reversed. A reversed image on the right, or vice versa. That serve, and what is the purpose of this? They're verbal mirrors that serve to remind us of who we are and what our relationship is to God and the cosmos. With respect to our relationship to God, and I know I'm moving a little bit quickly here, but I've been over this material before, and so I'm just getting to the next section where I've expanded and deserves some more time. With respect to our relationship to God, Carl Gustav Jung, the great 20th century avatar theologian and psychologist, Swiss, said, man is the mirror which God holds up before him. or the sense organ with which he apprehends as being. That is, we've been made in God's image. I mean, what he means by this, you know, is that we have been, that man has been made in God's image. That's what he means when he said man's the mirror which God holds up before him. And the sense organ with which he apprehends his being. And I mentioned earlier that we are a bundle of nerves all designed to take in impressions of the external world and through five different sense organs. Okay? And so we are this sense organ. That's what we do. We take these in, and the inner God, the immanent God that's within us, the imago Dei, the image of God that's within us, in Jungian terms, the self with a capital S, okay, which is the same thing as God, okay? God is within us all. And so when our sense organs take these sense impressions in, it is the self as well as our ego that is experiencing them. And that's what Jung means. Man is the sense organ with which God apprehends his being. But it's apprehending the external universe. How is that apprehending his being, one might ask? Well, because the universe is God's being. There is nothing that has been created that is not God's being. There is nothing that is not, that does not have God in it. And is not, in that sense, God. Okay? Now then, what does this mean? What does this mean for us? First of all, it means that we, having been made in God's image and likeness, are called upon to reflect not only God's image in our physical beings, which we do that without any effort, right? He made us in his image, so we don't have to do anything with respect to our physical beings, I guess, other than mutilate them, and something that and body mutilation is contrary to the commandments of Torah, and Jews believe this includes body adornment that is like tattoos. Okay, Jews, you won't find Jews with tattoos except those that came out of the concentration camps, the death camps that the Nazis ran in World War II. Okay, so we don't have to do anything except preserve our bodies, keep them healthy, the way that God gave them to us. And, of course, we can't keep them in that pristine condition, but that's our duty, to try to do that. But not only reflect his image that's in our physical beings, but also God's nature. Remember, he says, I have made man in my image and likeness. Okay, so in God's nature, his likeness. That means in our ethics and actions. We are to imitate God. This means we're called to imitate God. Now, there's a philosophical / theological term for that, and it's in Latin, as so many quote-unquote scholarly phrases are, and that is imitatio Dei. Imitatio Dei. Okay, that means imitation of God. We are called to imitate God in our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. Where do I get that? Well, God commands us to imitate him. It's a literal commandment that he's given us. In Leviticus chapter 11, verses 44 to 45, here's what God tells us. For I am the Lord your God, you shall therefore sanctify yourselves, and here it comes, you shall be holy, for I am holy. Nor shall you defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. For I am the Lord that brings you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. In those two verses, this exact clause is repeated. And Anytime something's repeated in Torah, you can bet your, whatever you want to bet, it's really important. God has deemed this as being a very important thing. Here it is. You shall be holy, for I am holy. Now, first of all, what does holy mean? Holy means separated. That's what holy means, separated. It means things that are holy are not mundane. It means they're not of this world. They're things that have been made into a sacrament. Things that have been set aside. That's what it means by separated. We have set aside a portion of our earnings, a portion of the bounty of the earth, of our livestock, to give to God in sacrifice. And in doing that, we have sanctified them. We have made them holy. God says, I am holy. That means God is separated. God is separate from the world, both metaphysically and, in a sense, physically. God lives in two places, both of which we can't see. The supernal world, where God exists in the Ezekiel, the tree of life, the 10 holy sephirot, which reflect his supernal form and body. Okay, but we can't see that unless we can transform our level of consciousness and journey there. We can see it in visions that God sends us in the night, as he says in Job. For I speak with them in dreams and visions of the night, but they hear me not. That's a paraphrase of a passage from Job. Okay, so we can see God that way. Or in the form of archetypes that the self gives us in dreams. Okay, but we cannot see him with our physical eyes, nor can we see him with our physical eyes in this world. The other place he resides is interior to us, as I said, the self, with a capital S, as Jung called it. Okay, So we're commanded to do this because God says, I am holy, therefore you shall be holy. If you who are my people must be like me. I have set myself apart from the normal ways and conventions, the normal pathways of the earth. You're not going to go out there and find God in the normal pathways of the earth. In other words, in the madhouse rush to get to work, in the madhouse rush to make rank in the corporations or in the military, that's not where you're going to find God, where you're having to screw over your neighbor in order to get ahead, because that's the only people who win in those systems because they're dysfunctional. Okay, those are mundane, earthly, human systems that are defective, and you're not likely to find God there. You're going to find God in a place that is sanctified and holy. As God said, when Moses walked up to the burning, the divine fire burning in the thorn bush, he said, remove your shoes, for the ground you stand upon is holy. It's set apart. Okay? So he says, the logic of God here is that you are my people, and if I am holy, then you must reflect my nature. Therefore, be holy. So it's an actual commandment. Okay, through the imitation of God, what happens? Well, we become more like God, don't we? If we begin to imitate not only the image that's in our physical body of God, but begin to reflect the 10 aspects of God, the 10 attributes of God that are in his 10 manifestations in the Holy Sephirot, then we become more like God. And what happens? This attracts us to God and God to us. Because remember, it's a Kabbalistic axiom that like attracts like. So if we imitate God, we become more like God. And this, in turn, causes an attraction, both drawing us upward toward God and God downward toward us. It draws down upon us a fuller stream of God's Shefa HaBerakah. That's Hebrew for blessing of sustenance. So we draw down upon ourselves and into this world God's Shafa HaBerakah, His blessing of sustenance, improving not only ourselves, but because that cannot be all contained with us, it radiates out from us because we become a mirror that shines, which I'll explain in another teaching here tomorrow, or in the next teaching, the one after. It affects the whole world. It improves the world. It raises the world up to a higher level of existence. And things become easier and better for everyone. Now you may be asking, but how do we do this? How does one imitate God? Well, don't worry about it. Because, as fate would have it, you were born in a time in which a methodology has been written down by a great teacher. Before I get to that, which I'll describe in just a second, I will just say this also. You also don't have to worry, because as if you concern yourself, if you're asking, how do I want to be holy, for my Lord is holy. I want to imitate God. I want to look at each one of those ten sefirot, at the attributes that they manifest in this world, at God's attributes. I want to be a source in this world of mercy upon those who hope that I will be merciful upon them. I want to exercise compassion, rachamim, as Tiferet, the sixth sephira, has. I want to exhibit loving kindness, the fourth sephira, hesed. I want to exhibit endurance and persistence, which is netzach, and not give up when the tide is turned against me and I fall down. I want to have the endurance and persistence to get right back up so that I can achieve the victory that God manifests in this world to those who persist in Hod, the ninth sephira. And we could go on and on and on discussing this. Okay, as you want to do this, what happens is you form inside yourself a kavana. Kavana is Hebrew for mystical intention. And just doing this and following through in doing it by concerning yourself with studying Torah, because that's one way, is to study Torah, it will literally change you inside and out. Do it, you'll find out. Don't take my word for it. Test what I'm about to tell you. Study Torah. Set aside a time every day. If it's only 20 minutes, that's better than what you have now, which I'm betting is probably not every day. Probably nothing every day. Just a few minutes, maybe once a week, or if that. Set aside a time in which you can study Torah for the best amount of time would be an hour. But if you can't do that, do 30 minutes. If you can't do that, do 20 or 15 minutes. Study the Torah. Bring it inside you. Those holy letters will come inside you and radiate God's Shafa HaBerakah, His blessing of sustenance on you. And it will be internalized in you. Then set aside some time for contemplation and prayer. You need to have a half an hour to do this. If you can't come up with a half an hour to study God's Torah and a half an hour to pray and meditate on God, then really you have no business being in this class or doing anything else that has to do with God, because you're not going to make it. Now, I'm not saying you're going to hell. I don't agree with that. That's not what I mean by you're not going to make it. What I mean is you're going to come back, and maybe in your next lifetime, you're going to realize that you have to set aside time for your relationship with God. It's a must. It's not a, oh, it'd be good to do, it'd be nice to do. It's a must. It's an absolute must. You have to do this. And then as you go outside, and you run into God's, your brothers and sister, which are the other, which is really you in another form. And so there's God in them, just as God is in you. Look for that. Look for the God in them. Look for the goodness in them. Look for their kindness. Look for their victories. Look for when they sin against you or against God, don't condemn them. Instead, look for your part in that sin. Because there's, as Jesus of Nazareth said, and I'm not preaching in Christianity, I will from time to time quote from him, because many of you who come to my classes come from Christian backgrounds. And the other thing is, I firmly believe that the teachings of the Christ, of this Jesus of Nazareth, he was a Mashiach ben Joseph. He was a Messiah of the house of Joseph. And that means that he had the soul of the Messiah in him, which in Greek terms is called the Christ. That's what it means, the Christ, the Christos, is the spirit or soul of the Messiah. Was working through this man called Jesus. He was not the Son of God any more than you and I are. We're all the sons of God. God says, Benai Yisrael, we are all the sons of Israel. We all came from God. God made Adam. So we're all the sons of man and we're all the sons of God. So all of that talk of it in the New Testament is totally meaningless in terms of trying to turn this man into a divinity. God has never been a man, never been here in the form of a man, and never will. God is God, and as I said, God is holy, and holy means separate. Okay, to do anything else, to believe anything else, is to blaspheme against the Lord Most High. Okay, so anyway, when you go about outside, look for these things, these good things in God's creation. And as Jesus said, when somebody sins against you and you look there, ignore and reject the temptation to judge your fellow man and condemn for doing something that you do. For as Jesus, the Christ, the Mashiach ben Joseph, said, you who is without sin, throw the first stone. No one threw a stone. Why? Because nobody is without sin. We are all sinners. We all fall short. So quit judging and instead look for the good things in each human being you come upon. Lift people up. If a person has fallen down in sin, then lift that person up. Help that person to get beyond what has tripped them up. And look for the wonders of God's creation in the world. God is in every single thing in the world. All of the animals live in a state of grace. There is no sin in them. They are perfect creatures. They are perfected creatures. They don't have the soul, the ruach, that we have. But they live in a state of God's grace. And you can worship God by observing and acknowledging and praising God for the wonders of his creation, his physical creation, nature, and taking care of it. Now, I mentioned just a moment ago, and I know I'm running late. Let's see how bad it is here. 43 minutes. Well, okay, it's going to be a little longer, but just a few minutes. I'll try to wrap this up in just a few minutes. Okay. I mentioned that there is a handbook that has been written that the total purpose is to help us imitate God. And this book was written by the great 16th century Kabbalist and teacher of Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Arizal. Okay, that teacher was of the Arizal, was Moses ben Yaakov Cordovero. Simply, usually just called Moses Cordovero. Okay? He lived in the 16th century in Safed, Israel. Was a teacher of the Arizal. The name of the book, it's a very thin book, and it's titled Tomer, I think it's less than 100 pages. Anyway, Tomer Devora, The Palm Tree of Deborah. You might have heard of this. And here's how it begins. The very first words or paragraph in this is, now listen to what he says. It is proper for man to imitate his Creator, resembling him in both likeness and image, according to the secret of the supernal form. Sound familiar? It's what I've been talking about. So he says it's proper for man to imitate his creator, resembling his creator in both likeness and image. And here's how we resemble the creator, according to the secret of the supernal form. What's the supernal form? The supernal form is the Etz Chaim, the tree of life, the tree of the ten holy sephirot. He goes on, Moses Cordovero, to say, because the chief supernal image and likeness is in deeds. A human resemblance merely in bodily appearance and not in deeds debases that form. Of the man who resembles the form and body alone, it is said, quote, a handsome form whose deeds are ugly, end quote. For what value can there be in man's resemblance to the supernal form in bodily limbs if his deeds have no resemblance to those of his creator? Consequently, it is proper for man to imitate the acts of the supernal crown, which are the 13 highest attributes of mercy. So, and of course, the supernal form that's referred to here, as I said, is the Etz Chaim, the tree of life, the tree of the ten holy sephirot. Cordovero goes on in this book to discuss in depth each attribute of God, of his 13 attributes of mercy, okay? So it goes somewhat beyond the ten sephirot, okay? If you send me, it's this, and how a person can go about imitating these attributes. Okay, so there it is, like a handbook. And it's really easy to read. I suggest you get it. This book is actually now online. You can buy it through Amazon, or you can get it for free online without the commentary, free of charge. If you send me an email request, I'll send you the website address. So send an email request to Yanyal, Y-Y-A-N-A-L, as in Reb Yanyal. Okay, so it's Yanyal at BeitShemTov.org. I'll ask me and I'll send you a link to it. All right, or you can just do a Google search and find it under Tomer Devorah. All right, now what else does it mean that we have been made in God's image? And when God looks at us, he sees a reflection of himself. Something that's critically important, so you'll want to underline this in your notes and memory. I'm looking here, and it's just too far to go. We've been gone on too long. I'm going to just take up here, make a note here that this is where we're leaving off, and I'll leave you with that cliffhanger. What else does it mean that we have been made in God's image and likeness, and when God looks at us, he sees a reflection of himself? It's something that's critically important, something so important that you'll want to underline it in your notes, if you're making notes, and certainly in your memory. So I'll leave you with that cliffhanger. That's going to do it for today. It's been recorded, of course, as an MP3 file, and it'll be rebroadcast tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You're certainly welcome to come. Tell your friends about these teachings if you think they might enjoy them or benefit from them. This is the second Erev Shabbat coming up, so there's no Erev Shabbat worship service this Friday. The next time that you can meet with me live will be this coming Monday at the same time and place here as today, which is 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. All right. Until we meet again, I ask God to bless you, to place his blessing upon you, to make his face shine upon you, and to watch over and protect you from all harm or misfortune. May you remember God at least twice a day and delight God in that memory and in bringing him into your consciousness. May you go from strength to strength, be strong, Zagazant.